listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Escape. But first, let's enjoy the Screen Guild Theater. The Screen Guild was first heard for Gulf on CBS in January of 1939. In all of radio, no program succeeded in wooing more top Hollywood stars in the same time span than this one. While the Lux Radio Theater was paying up to $5,000 per appearance for its film stars, Screen Guild was a charity show, donating all star fees to the Motion Picture Relief Fund. Because of its mission, virtually every star in Hollywood was eager to appear on the Screen Guild Theater. The theater always provided top Hollywood dramas to a consistently high level. In 1942, the Gulf Oil Company dropped sponsorship, largely due to the fact that the war was having a big impact on the oil industry. The show then moved to NBC Thursday nights in October of 1948. A new 60-minute Screen Guild Theater moved to ABC, where it continued until May of 1951. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Screen Guild Theater and Pardon My Past from May of 1947. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The Screen Guild Players. The Lady Esther Screen Guild play tonight, Pardon My Past. The starring players.
This is Marguerite Chapman.
This is John Hodiak.
And this is Bill Demarest.
Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild Players and Columbia Pictures' amusing study of double identity, Pardon My Past. It stars John Hodiak in the dual role of Eddie York and Francis Pemberton, and Marguerite Chapman and William Demarest in their original roles of Joan and Chuck. The Lady Esther Screen Guild Players in Pardon My Past.
Me, my name is Eddie York, and I saw plenty of action during the war. But the thing that happened right afterward, believe me, that shouldn't happen to a dog face. We were walking along Fifth Avenue, Chuck Gibson and I, and we thought we had the world by the tail. We had our discharge papers, some new civvies that almost fit us, two tickets to Beaver Falls, and enough cash in my wallet to start a mink farm, $3,000. We'd saved that out of our army pay and a couple of crap games on the boat coming back. Yeah, I guess we were feeling pretty good until this mean-looking guy stepped up to us.
Hello, Pemberton.
What? You talking to me?
You heard me, Pemberton.
What? Now, wait a minute, bud. You got the wrong guy.
Yeah, his name is Eddie York. You better blow, mister. We don't like strangers.
Pemberton, I got orders to bring you in.
Me? Bring me in where?
Yeah, beat it, guy. Or I'll smack you three ways from... Uh-oh. A gun. Why didn't you say you was a cop?
I got a car here. Get in.
Now, look here, officer.
Move, I said.
Okay, but you'll find out you've made a mistake.
Same to you, Mr. Pemberton. I got him, Mr. Arnold. Here he is.
Oh, yes, Long. Bring him in.
Hey, Eddie, this ain't no police station.
Well, these guys aren't cops. This joint is upholstered like a...
Quiet, you guys. Mr. Arnold does the talking.
Sit down, gentlemen. I was just looking at this book my dealer found for me. A real bargain, $5,000.
$5,000 for a book?
Do you read Shakespeare, my friend?
No.
You do read?
Sure I read. Where do you get off asking things like that?
Don't holler at Mr. Arnold.
It's quite all right, Long. Now then, Mr. Pemberton.
Look, you've got me mixed up with somebody else. My name is Eddie York.
And my name is Gibson. We're mink ranchers.
Yeah, and we're leaving for Beaver Falls tomorrow.
Mr. Pemberton, please.
You really believe my name is Pemberton?
Francis Pemberton. And 2 years ago, you placed a bet with me. $12,000 on Pegasus in the sixth race at Hialeah. Since then, you've been a little difficult to locate. But now I must insist that you pay. You see, my hobbies are rather expensive, Mr. Pemberton.
Look, if you keep on calling me Pemberton...
Hold it. Don't make a move.
I was just reaching for my wallet.
An excellent idea. Put your gun down, Long.
Well, there you are, in black and white on my discharge card. Eddie York.
I'll take that wallet, please.
What?
Hand it over, Eddie. They got a gun.
Well...
Thank you. $3,000.
Hey, wait a minute. That's every penny I've got.
We've got.
You had. Mr. Pemberton, I'll credit this to your account. And I'm afraid I'll have to call on you tomorrow for the balance.
But you can't...
Murder is rather frowned upon these days in my profession, but I have one very bad mental quirk. I can't bear it when live people owe me money.
Huh?
Long, take them away. Drop them where you found them.
That was a fine how do you do. Next thing, we're back on Fifth Avenue again, only Arnold's got my wallet and my 3,000 bucks.
Ah, 3,000 bucks.
Our 3,000. And it was pretty clear by now I really did look like this Francis Pemberton. So Chuck came up with a bright idea. To find out where this Pemberton lived, go up there, explain, and get our money back. Well, it was a pretty big house, a real mansion. And you can imagine the shock when the butler opened the door for us.
Mr. Pemberton! This is a surprise, sir. Shall I get you a drink?
Well...
Bourbon and soda.
I was pinching myself to make sure I wasn't dreaming. And just then, the nicest dream of all came floating down the hall.
Francis, I'm so happy to see you. Why didn't you write or something? How are you? How was Mexico?
Mexico?
Yes.
Well, look, there's something I've got to explain. I mean...
Silly, isn't this your home? Why should you apologize?
Well...
No reason at all.
Oh, how do you do? I don't think we've met, but then Francis always forgets to introduce people.
The name is Gibson, ma'am. Just call me Chuck.
How nice. You can call me Joan if you want to.
I want to.
I hope you're staying with us, Chuck.
Well, just for a few days, maybe, till I build up my strength.
Yes, he's leaving as soon as I pay him some money I owe him,
$3,000. $3,000. I see your luck hasn't changed. Well, Francis, why don't you give him a check?
A check? Oh, well, I would, only... Well, I think Chuck would rather have the cash, wouldn't you, Chuck?
Yeah, good hard cash. That's for me.
Well, I don't think there's that much in the house.
Oh.
But then you can call Uncle Wills in the morning.
Can't we call him tonight?
No, he's in Washington till tomorrow morning. So I guess that means you're staying, Chuck. I'll have a guest room made ready. Francis, you'll be in your old room, of course.
Look, Joan, I can't really...
Not now. I'd better go find the housekeeper.
Eddie, we're in.
Chuck, who do you think that girl is?
I don't know. What's the difference?
Well, suppose she's my wife.
Is that bad?
Now, wait a minute. I won't do it, Chuck. It's wrong. It's not right. It's...
Francis!
Uh-oh. Another relative.
Well. I thought we'd got rid of you. Not back to stay, I hope.
Well...
Same old worthless tomcat you was before. What to do? Run you out down there?
Hey, now, look. You can't talk to my pal that way.
Who are you?
I was gonna ask that. Who are you, his old man?
I could sue you for that. I'm only his grandpa. As far as I'm concerned, that's too darn close for
Grandpa,
comfort.
Francis, don't mind him. You know how he is.
But does he talk to everybody this way?
Why don't you open the window and toss the old cockroach out in the petunias?
Him? If he did, I might think there was still some hope for him.
Now, Grandpa, come along. It's way past your bedtime.
Good night, Papa. Nice to have met you.
Oh, yeah? Well, take mutual. Good night.
Hey, Eddie, all those things they told us we was fighting for. You know, I think this is it. Boy, what a joint. And what a room they gave me.
They gave us. I'm staying here, too.
But you got your own room. You heard her say so.
I don't even know where it is, and she might be in there. No, thanks. I'm sitting this one out. I'm not making a move until I find...
Oh, so there you are, you dandy-legged warthog.
What have I done now?
Nothing, as usual. The question is, what are you going to do?
About what?
About what? Young man, I'm talking about the little lady down the hall. 2 years you've been away, and her crying her heart out every night. Now, you just march your way in there and do something about it. Go on, she's waiting for you. Go on now, get.
Yes, but I...
Nighty night, pal.
I'll talk to you later. Now what? Where do I go? What do I do? Who do I see?
Francis.
Uh-oh.
Francis, I've been waiting for you. I want to talk to you.
Well, sure. Why not? Such a lovely night. Couldn't find a nicer night to talk.
Francis, are you all right?
To me? Sure. Fine. Perfect.
I didn't get a chance to ask you before, but... Francis, what about Mary?
Mary?
Yes, Mary.
Well, I was sort of hoping we could forget about that.
I suppose you'd like to forget about Stephanie, too.
Stephanie?
You've treated her even worse than Mary.
I'm sorry. I guess that's the way I am. Just a brute, that's all.
Aren't you even curious about her? Don't you want to know how she is?
Oh, sure. You know, I've been wondering. How is she, anyway?
Come on, I'll take you in to see her.
You mean she's here, right here in the house?
Well, of course she's here. Uncle Wills has been very careful about that. He's got two detectives watching her all the time.
Why? Is she violent or something?
Francis, I know you've acted oddly at times, but when you talk that way,
Forget it.
All right. Here's Stephanie's room.
Look, do you think I ought to barge in like this? I mean...
Stephanie, see who's here. Wait a minute, darling. I'll turn on the light. Stephanie, look.
Daddy!
Well, I'll be darned. Slowly now, the pieces of the puzzle started fitting together. Mary was Francis Beverton's wife. Stephanie was his child. And Joan? She's the one I was really interested in. Joan was some sort of relative who lived in the house and took care of the youngster. The youngster. I had quite a time with her. She hung on like she'd never let me go and kept saying over and over again,
Daddy, can't I see Mommy? Can't I see Mommy? Please.
So I just said, sure, you can see your mother, Stephanie. And Joan said,
Francis, that's wonderful. I think you're a darling.
And then when I got back to Chuck's room, he said,
Eddie, don't look now, but you got lipstick.
Well, I got a pretty good night's sleep. But the next morning, Stephanie's mother arrived. I guess Joan had called her, and that's when my trouble started all over again.
Thank you, Francis. Thank you for letting me see her.
Well, that's okay. Forget it.
Daddy, like Mommy, don't you?
Oh, well, sure. I mean...
Daddy, can I go and stay with Mommy sometime?
Now, darling, Daddy's been very kind already. Let's not take advantage of it.
But I want to. Daddy, can I go and stay just a little while?
Oh, I guess so. Sure, go ahead.
Francis, you're not joking.
What? Well, no, of course not. Take her anytime you want. Why shouldn't a child be with her mother?
Oh, thank you again, Francis. I still can't believe it. You've changed so much. Why didn't you answer my letters, Francis?
Letters?
Didn't you get them?
Oh, you mean your letters? Well, that's a long story. You see, I...
Francis?
Oh, hello, Joan.
Francis, there's a Mr. Arnold here to see you. He's in the library with Chuck.
With Chuck?
I think you'd better go in.
Yeah, I think I'd better, too.
That's the difference between us, Mr. Pemberton. When I make a promise, I always keep it. And I promised we'd collect the balance of what you owe us today.
Look, Mr. Arnold, you've got to believe me. I'm not this Pemberton guy you're after.
Of course not. You just live in his home. You just order his servants about. You just...
Listen, lunkhead, don't you understand?
Shut up, you.
It's a pleasure.
It's amazing how persuasive Long can be when you know he has that little gun. And now then, Mr. Pemberton, I'd like my money.
I tell you, I haven't got it. I haven't got a dime.
What's that?
No, huh? Uncle Will, please. I'll give him a piece of my mind. I'll tell him off.
What part of your amazing family is that, Mr. Pemberton?
Well, I guess that must be my Uncle Will's.
No need for you to come in, Joan. I'll handle this alone.
Alone, he says.
Francis, what's the meaning of this?
Well, you see, I needed a little money.
I'm not talking about the money. The money is nothing.
Nothing, he says.
Be quiet, sir. Francis, what is Mary doing here?
Well, Stephanie wanted to see her, and I thought...
You fool. You idiot.
After spending 2 years in court to prove she was an unfit mother, I won't allow it, you hear? I won't have it.
I thought it might be something like that.
What's that?
Look,
we can talk about the ladies later. Right now, let's concentrate on the moolah, huh?
Francis, what is this moron talking about?
Money. I need $3,000. I need $12,000. I need it right away.
What for? If you think I'm just going to hand you $12,000...
Just a minute, Uncle Wills. I want to ask you something. Is this money mine?
Well, of course it's yours, but just the same...
Then don't give me any more arguments, see?
What did you say?
I said I'm tired of listening to you shoot off your mouth. I want $12,000, and I want it right now.
Well, I haven't got that much in cash, of course, but if a check will do...
Here you are. Here's a pen.
Thank you. Francis, I'd like to talk to
you. Just keep on writing. Come on, you can talk later. Come
yes. On. Yes. Here you are, Francis. $12,000. I wait for you outside till your friends have gone.
Hey, we did it, pal. We got the dough.
Yeah. Pay to the order of Francis Pemberton.
I believe that check belongs to me, if you please.
But now, look, you've already collected $3,000 from us and my wallet, too.
Oh, I have that right here. Cash, phony identification papers and everything. You can have it back as soon as you endorse this check. May I have your pen, Cluck?
The name is Chuck.
A rose by any other name. Thank you. Now, Mr. Pemberton, if you'll just sign here. Francis Pemberton. That's fine. Here's your wallet. And let me assure you, I was never happier to say goodbye. Let's go along.
Yes, sir. Right with you, Mr. Ronald.
Hey, Chuck, look, it's all here. The whole $3,000. Now we can scram out of this place.
What's the matter?
Holy cow, Chuck.
What's the matter?
I just realized I signed Francis Pemberton's name on that check. They won't honor it at the bank, and Arnold's going to think we crossed him. Chuck, for the love of Pete, what'll we do?
You had the right idea a minute ago. Let's scram.
The second act of the Lady Esther Screen Guild play will follow in a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, Lady Esther presents the second act of Pardon My Past, starring Marguerite Chapman, John Hodiak, and William Demarest.
We really meant to scram out of there, and we were on our way when it happened. The one thing we hadn't counted on. We heard the front doorbell ring, and we heard the butler go to answer it. We heard the big door swing open, and then... Hello, Birch. I'm afraid that I forgot my key.
Mr. Pemberton.
Oh, come now. You can't be that surprised.
But Mr. Pemberton, you were just in the...
In Mexico, of course. Now, suppose you forget the welcoming ceremonies and go and fix me a bourbon and soda.
Yes, sir.
And, Birch, if my return is such a shock to you, perhaps you'd better fix one for yourself. It was him, all right. Francis Pemberton. But if you'd asked me right then, I'd have said it was me. I caught a squint of him as he went down the hall, and it was just like I was looking in a mirror. We two were alike as two peas on a fork. Even Uncle Wills couldn't tell the difference. Just then he came barging down the hall stairs.
Francis?
Hello, Uncle Wills. Surprised?
I certainly was. Francis, I never thought you'd speak to me that way.
What way?
The way you spoke in the library.
The library? I haven't been in the library.
Now, Francis, please.
But I haven't. I just got here, Uncle Wills. I just arrived from Mexico. Really, I haven't been in the house a full minute.
Then it must have been an imposter.
An imposter?
He looked like you. He spoke like you. I would have sworn it was you. Why, I even gave him a check for $12,000.
You did?
Yes. And Mary and Stephanie. This explains everything.
What? What about Mary and Stephanie?
They're gone.
Gone?
Don't you see what happened? This crook must have been mistaken for you in the past. He knew that he could pass as your double.
But Uncle Will...
It's as clear as crystal. He reads about the divorce, gets in touch with Mary. They cook up a deal to kidnap Stephanie.
Kidnap and... Stephanie? Uncle Wills, we've got to do something.
Don't worry, my boy. They won't get far. Birch? Birch, where are you?
Right here, sir.
Get the police on the telephone. Then call the bank. Make it fast, Birch.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Francis, I'll stop that check. They won't get a dime.
I don't care about the money, Uncle Wills. It's Mary. I was hoping that if I pulled myself together, she might maybe give me another try. I never thought she'd do a thing like this.
Now, Francis, I know just how you feel, but I must insist you leave Mary to me.
All right. I guess I've been a lot of trouble.
Well, I've always tried to help you, my boy. But now you've had a long trip. You must be very tired. You better go upstairs and get some rest.
Right about there, Chuck and I began to boil. Overhearing a thing like that, we knew Uncle Wills was pulling a fast one. But we didn't have much time to feel sorry for Francis. We were too worried about ourselves. We couldn't stay in the house, and we couldn't leave, not with the cops out looking for us, so we ducked into a big closet in the library. And that's how we happened to hear Grandpa and Joan.
Doesn't matter what Uncle Wills might say. I don't believe it, Grandpa. I just don't believe that fellow was a crook.
Of course he wasn't no crook. Plain as the nose on Uncle Will's face.
What makes you so sure?
Because I know, that's why. That fellow must have been Francis' twin brother.
Twin brother?
Nobody knew it but me. You see, Francis was adopted when he was 6 months old. But they never told him. They thought it might be better that way.
Well, yes, but the twin...
John and Sue would have taken them both, but the other one had already been spoken for. Whoever it was, they got the good one.
Oh, Grandpa, I'm so glad to know the truth.
You are, huh? Why? You take a shine to that other feller?
Oh, well, I liked him. Yeah. I thought he was Francis. I'm so happy to know he changed.
Hmm. Must be this spring weather. You better drink yourself some molasses and sulfur.
Now, Grandpa, please.
Well, drink something. That's what I'm going to do. Unless Francis finished everything in the house already. You got good taste, girl. I like the feller myself.
I wonder how he knew. I wonder how he knew it.
Joan.
Where did you...
Shh.
Where did you come from?
That's a long story, sister. We ain't hardly got time for that now.
Joan, I want to talk to you.
I don't even know. I don't know which one you are.
With me around, how can you miss?
Joan, I couldn't tell you before. We got into this thing and we couldn't get out. My name is Eddie York.
How do you do?
I'm pleased to meet you.
How do you like that? We're up to our neck and they're starting to get formal. Eddie, tell her, will you?
We're in trouble, Joan. We're in lots of trouble.
You mean the police?
Listen, that's just a half of it.
I endorsed that check to Mr. Arnold. When it turns up, NG, he'll come gunning for us. You've got to help us get away from here. You could get us a cab or a car or anything. Well, is that too much to ask? I thought you liked me.
I did. That's why I'm so disappointed.
Disappointed?
You're only thinking of yourself.
Who else is there?
Francis. I didn't think you'd run out on him.
Oh, now, look, Joan.
You must know what Uncle Wills is doing to him, and to Mary, too. I've tried to tell Francis, but he won't even listen. You're the only one who can set him straight.
But, Joan...
You spoke to Mary, and you know how she feels. It's Uncle Wills who's keeping them apart. And if you walk out now,
Who says we're walking?
I say we're walking.
Now, take it easy, Chuck.
Eddie, you'll do it? You'll make Francis wake up?
No. I've got a better idea. We'll let Uncle Wills wake him up.
But how?
Can you get Francis down here? Make him hide in that closet? Tell him Mary wants to see him or something?
I think so.
Okay. I'll come back in here, and then...
And then what?
And I'll just wait for Uncle Will.
Francis?
Oh, hello, Uncle Will.
I thought you were upstairs in your room.
I am.
Beg your pardon?
Yep. Sound asleep, like I've been for years.
Francis, are you feeling all right?
Oh, sure. Sure, I feel fine. But, Uncle Wills, I think you need a pair of glasses. Unless you want to take another look at me.
Take another look at... You mean you're the other one? I thought you'd gone.
Curiosity killed my cousin, the cat. I had to find something out before I left.
What do you want?
I want to know what you did with all those letters from Mary. You don't like to put that into words, do you? You don't like to say you destroyed them all.
I'm asking you again. What do you want?
I want to know why you're keeping those two apart. You wouldn't like to answer that either, would you? You wouldn't like to say you want to keep control of Francis. Maybe not so much Francis, but control of his money. You wouldn't like to admit what might happen to you if Francis took over control, if he ever started going over his books and discovered what a sucker he's been.
All right. I'll make you a proposition, my friend.
I'm willing to listen.
Why did you come here in the first place? For money?
Well, in a way.
Very well. If you'll clear out of here and stop meddling, I'll make good that check I gave you this morning and possibly add a little more besides. What do you say?
Well, I always like to sleep on a deal.
No, I've got to know right now.
Look, just let me think it over a little. You stay right here. I'll go out in the hall.
It won't be long.
No. No, I've got a hunch it won't be long at all.
Eddie, shh.
We couldn't resist. We've been listening out here. Eddie, do you think it's going to work?
Well, I don't know. Francis was in that closet, and he must have gotten a lowdown on Uncle Will's. Now, if he's just got spine enough to come up... Oh! Yes, he came out. He came out fine.
Okay, Mr. Robin Hood, you got everything settled. Now can we scram out of this joint?
Now, wait a minute, Chuck. How about Arnold?
Well, I'm sure Francis will take care of him. But what about Mary?
Well, I'm sure that Francis will take care of her, too. Now, what about us?
Us?
Joni, do you know anything about Mink?
Not much. I've never met one formally.
I want to start from the bottom and learn with us.
He means we're going to run our Mink ranch.
Yeah, we three could be very happy together.
We three?
How about it, Joan?
Eddie...
Hey, Eddie, you got lipstick again.
Yes, but now it's legitimate. I'm in the family. We're going to be related by marriage.
Thank you, William Demarest, John Hodiak, and Marguerite Chapman for your delightful performances in tonight's play.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley. It was our fun. The wonderful work being done by the Motion Picture Relief Fund and its country house makes our appearances with the Lady Esther Screen Guild players a double pleasure. For we know the benefits from these programs support that work.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present Brief Encounter. It will star Herbert Marshall and Lily Palmer. Be sure to listen. Pardon My Past was produced and directed by Bill Lawrence, adapted by Harry Cronman, and was presented through the courtesy of Columbia Pictures and Mutual Productions. Music on tonight's show was arranged and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. John Hodiak appeared by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of the Technicolor picture, The Yearling, starring Gregory Peck, Jane Wyman, and Claude Jarman, Jr. William Demarest will soon be seen in Paramount's Technicolor production, The Perils of Pauline. Marguerite Chapman appeared through the courtesy of Columbia Pictures, producers of the Technicolor picture, Down to Earth, starring Rita Hayworth and Larry Parks. This is Truman Bradley speaking for Lady Esther. Thank you and good night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From May of 1947 has been the Screen Guild Theater with Pardon My Past. In a moment, we'll escape with a periscope. As this edition of Yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Escape, radio's greatest series of high adventure, began as a CBS run in 1947. Shifted here and there, often used as a summer replacement program for such programs as Suspense. Escape, with its small, sustaining budget, didn't have the regular high-priced film stars who often appeared on Suspense, but instead had a steady group of radio's old pros that held the series together. William Conrad and Paul Frees were the shining lights. Frees did the announcing in the early days, and then later, Conrad took over. From the beginning, Escape took its stories from the classics of adventure. Later, original scripts were used, but Escape still continued doing many great plays, including Jack London's The Scarlet Plague. Many of the stories dramatized on Escape became radio classics and were later redone on Suspense. The producer-director for much of the run was the talented Norman MacDonald. Program ended in September of 1954. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Escape and Up Periscope from August of 1951. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Finding life rather dull, dreaming again of exotic places, wishing you were somewhere else, we offer you Escape.
Escape. escape with us now to the Yellow Sea and the story of a man who fought the entire Japanese Navy with an ancient submarine and an untrained crew, as Alec Hudson tells it in his exciting story, Up Periscope.
It happened in 1938. Pearl Harbor was just another naval base somewhere in the Pacific, and China, still further away, was swarming with Japanese invaders. And in 1938, a United States submarine, the S-52, docked at Pearl Harbor, and I walked down her gangplank. No longer commanding officer, merely Lieutenant Thomas J. Baker, USN, retired. I said a fond farewell to the boatswain's mate, tucked my commissioning pennant under one arm, moved into the Moana Hotel on Waikiki, just outside Honolulu. And an hour later, I was at the Moana Bar, sipping an exotic Hawaiian drink known as bourbon and water, and toasting my lost career in silence. That was until a strange little man behind horn-rimmed glasses tapped my elbow.
Excuse me, please. Let me buy this drink for you, Lieutenant Baker.
Beg your pardon?
Oh, you do not know me, of course. But I have spent some hours searching for you, Lieutenant.
I didn't get the name.
It is Lee, Sung Lee. You are, of course, the former commanding officer of the submarine S-52.
Yeah.
You docked at Pearl Harbor on Tuesday, and today, at precisely 12 o'clock noon, you were relieved of your command by your executive officer.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
You received what your Navy refers to as a medical discharge. It was found that you are deaf in your left ear. Is that not correct, Lieutenant Baker?
Yeah.
You see, my facts are accurate.
Yeah.
I am an unofficial representative of the Chinese government. I have come to you with a business proposition.
A business proposition?
You are available, are you not?
Well, yeah, I think you could say that.
It is a pity that a young man such as yourself should have his chosen career destroyed by such a trivial matter as the hearing of a watch ticking.
You must have been there for the examination.
I am well aware of these matters. All too often, your Navy acts somewhat hastily, without due consideration for all of the facts.
What's your proposition, Mr. Lee?
You are direct. That is good. Lieutenant Baker, I have come to offer you command of a Chinese submarine for action against the Japanese invaders.
I beg your pardon?
It is true. The Chinese government desires that you take charge of a submarine for operations at the mouth of the Yangtze River.
The Yangtze?
You are familiar with this area, of course. Then perhaps you would consider the following terms. We will pay you $1,000 each month, plus your expenses. In addition to this amount, you will receive a bonus.
Go on, Mr. Lee.
A bonus of $50,000 for each major Japanese ship you might sink.
$50,000?
That is correct. Your answer, Lieutenant Baker?
Maybe you better give me a little time, Mr. Lee.
Time is of the essence. That is an American expression, is it not?
Make it 1 week. A week from today.
Very well. 1 week from today, and we will have your answer. Need I remind you, Lieutenant, that in this matter, the utmost secrecy must be maintained.
Yeah, I'm aware of that, Mr. Lee.
Good. Thank you, Lieutenant. China will not forget you.
The market for slightly used submarine officers was at low ebb in 1938. So a week later, I met with Mr. Lee and three elderly Chinese. I made a counterproposal. Would I be allowed to hire three key men of my own choice as assistants? Mr. Lee and friends agreed. And I found myself promoted. Lieutenant Commander Thomas J. Baker, Chinese Navy. I wired three ex-shipmates. Two answered. Chuck Young, an engineer who'd been paid off after 16 years of service. And Jimmy Mann, my old chief torpedoman from the boats in Panama. A week later, Young and Mann arrived. And 2 days after that, Young, Mann, and myself took the clipper for Hong Kong. Our destination, Amoy. On the decks of Amoy, we were met by a bright-looking young man in a light blue gown and a black silk Chinese cap. He introduced himself.
You are Captain Baker, is it not correct? I am Wong, your first officer.
How do you do, Wong? This is our engineer, Chief Young.
Yeah, howdy.
And our chief torpedoman, Jimmy Mann.
Glad to meet you, Mr. Wong.
With deepest gratitude and humility, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, sure thing.
If you gentlemen will follow me now, I'll show you your quarters. This way, please.
Hey, Skip. What does he mean, show us to our quarters? I don't even see a boat.
You see a Chinese junk port side to up ahead?
Sure, but who signed up for a junk? I thought we was back in a pig boat, maybe.
Open your eyes, man. It's a decoy. Subs under that straw and bamboo.
What is this, a game?
They're fighting a war over here, man. That means Jap bomber patrols.
Oh, I get it.
Congratulations.
Hey, stow it. Here comes one.
Will you step aboard now, please?
All right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your thing.
This is Lieutenant Lou, Captain. Here's your second officer.
How do you do, Lieutenant?
Indeed a pleasure to welcome you aboard, Captain.
What a Neptune, it's an S-boat.
It is indeed, ancient gentleman, but we have kept it in good repair. Would you care to inspect our humble ship?
Yes, I would. Thanks, Wong.
Lieutenant Lou and myself will see that your quarters are in order, gentlemen.
1918 class, 12 knots surfaced, 8 submerged.
That means 2 main diesels, 500 oars each. I put 10 years in on one of these fish.
And 4 torpedo tubes forward. That ain't much bite, Skipper.
No, it's the best we've got. All right, you two, now you've seen her. One S-boat to fight the Navy. Here's where you sign on or off. Young?
I'm on, Skipper.
Man?
We got a crew of Chinese farmers that can't speak a word of English. We got an S-boat somebody dredged up from under the main. We got officers wearing blue kimonos.
Man, on or off?
Okay, Skipper, I'm on.
Man was right about the crew. Outside of Lou and Wong, not a man among them could understand even pidgin English. One thing about our Chinese S-boat was universal: the smell. The smell of fuel oil and acid and humans at work. And we worked around the clock. I was given 30 days to mold 800 tons of iron into a ship and a mass of Chinese peasants into a fighting force. Young complained constantly, the way a chief petty officer or a sergeant complains. So I knew he was making out all right. But Jimmy Mann came up with a unique problem.
Okay, Skipper, so now we got torpedo fuel. Best darn torpedo fuel I ever tasted.
Since when did you switch to grain alcohol?
You know we ain't got no grain alcohol. It's just that I found us a substitute.
All right, tell me about it.
Well, it seems there was some gin on the docks one day. Several cases. By rigging up my own little still, I was able, with tears in my eyes, to change the gin into torpedo fuel.
I'll see if the Chinese government hasn't got a spare Navy cross.
Just call me Kentucky Jim Mann. We're serving old torpedo in the galley.
I made an itemized list out on the Chinese S-boat. It showed no deck guns, sound gear worse than useless, no fire control system for firing the torpedoes, and no flood control. Then one day toward the end of the month, Chuck Young brought up the real problem.
I tell you, Skipper, it can't be done. These old batteries are next to worthless.
Well, you can't expect much of batteries that have been lying around a back channel for years.
Expect much? But, Skipper, batteries are the life of a sub. If we got no batteries, we got no boat.
I'm painfully aware of that, Chuck.
You know what happens to old batteries? They seep hydrogen. One of these days, we're going to be submerged, and the hydrogen is going to start leaking out, and wham! They blow up like a Chinese firecracker.
Then we'll have to be cautious.
Cautious? With hydrogen? You can't see the stuff. You can't hear it. You can't smell it. Something makes a spark, the whole boat blows sky high.
All right, Chuck, have you got any suggestions?
Well, you're outside of forgetting the whole thing.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Get your engine room in order, Chief. We're sailing for the Yangtze tomorrow.
We will return to Escape and today's story, Up Periscope, in just a moment.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now, back to Escape.
We sailed north through the Formosa Strait, traveling submerged, surfacing only after sunset. It took us 10 days to get to the latitude of the Saddle Islands. And in those 10 days, my Chinese crew behaved like veterans. Just north of the saddles, we took up station across the most probable route of the convoys coming down from Japan. One afternoon, we were in the middle of one of those Saddle Island fogs with a five-knot wind that blew the stuff in patches. At about 5 o'clock, a patch of clear weather blew in and we went down. My first officer, Lieutenant Wong, was standing next to me. When I brought her to periscope depth and took a look around, my heart nearly jumped out of my mouth.
You sighted something, Captain?
One, two, three, four, five. Good Lord.
It is Japanese convoy, Captain.
More than a convoy, Wong. An entire division. Heavy stuff. Battleships, cruisers, destroyers. Here, have a look.
Ah, yes, Captain. It is, as you say, 4,000 or 5,000 yards.
They're lying stern to. They're anchored, waiting for the fog to lift. Wong, stand by to submerge.
But, Captain, an entire Japanese fleet...
Well, what do you think we're here for? Down periscope. Signal General Headquarters. We're going down to attack. Wong took the helm, and Lu was the diving officer, chanting his orders in sing-song Cantonese to the bow and stern planesmen. And in 2 minutes, our S-boat was ready to attack.
Torpedo tubes loaded and ready, Skipper.
Steady on course 210, Captain.
We'll run parallel at 1,500 yards. Hard right rudder.
Hard right rudder, sir.
Up periscope.
Up periscope, sir.
Tongileo, my senior.
Steady on course 090.
090, sir.
Once again, hold.
We'll take the battle wagon first, Wong. That's Matsui class. Come left 5 degrees.
Come left 5 degrees, sir.
There she is, Wong. Lying there, inviting a tin fish.
Steady on course 0 right 5, sir.
Start timing.
10 seconds. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. 7 seconds. 6 seconds. 5 seconds.
Stand by to fire one.
4 seconds. 3 seconds. 2 seconds. 1 second. Time up.
Fire one. Hold it down, Lou. Don't broach her.
Hold on. Aye, aye, sir. Don't be letting it go.
Fire two. One, two, three, four. Fire three. Steady, one.
Steady, sir.
Steady. Fire four! Down periscope!
Martino!
Left full rudder, full speed ahead!
You know, I ain't going down, Marley.
Take it down to 100 feet!
Johnson, Johnson, you know! Uncle Liang, I can't get you to home, Martin, you know, Martin, you know.
Come to course 340.
340, sir.
Down to 100 feet, Captain.
Captain, did we...
Wait a minute.
Skipper, it's ahead. Two. Three. Four of 20 hits. Four out of four.
14 fish in a battle wagon's guts, Jimmy, huh? Well, just don't stand there, man. Reload. We're going back for more.
Aye, aye, Skipper. The tubes are practically ready.
Stand by to bring her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, Captain.
But... Oh, it's coming, surely.
Battleships can take it, Wong. We want to be sure. Destroyers dropping depth charges. They'll be spraying them like hand grenades. Right full rudder.
Right full rudder, sir.
The boats are ready to fire again, Skipper.
Good. Stand by. Course 250.
250, sir.
Take her up, Lou.
Aye, aye, sir.
I had time for one quick periscope exposure, and it told me everything I could want to know. The Jap battleship lay on her side, her rail under. She was sinking. On the horizon, a group of destroyers were depth charging the daylights out of some innocent fish. The fog was drifting in. It would be dark in half an hour. And it was no use wasting another torpedo on the battleship, and the destroyers were too tough to hit. I had 6 torpedoes left, and I wanted to save them for the big boys. I let Wong have a look through the periscope.
Oh, the battleship. We sunk the battleship. Wait until we report this to our leaders.
Yeah, we aren't finished yet.
Hey, Captain, look, quickly. Another big ship, close to us.
Let me have it. It's a cruiser. 10,000 tons at least. All right, sailors, there's our next target. Left full rudder.
Left full rudder, sir.
Stand by to fire one. Yeah, we'll have to gamble this one, Wong. Yeah, I guess it's speed at 30 knots. Course 260. We'll take a 90-degree track. Down, periscope.
Oh, now listen, no more.
Full speed ahead.
Full speed ahead.
Wong, start timing.
10 seconds. 9 seconds. 8 seconds. Oh, 7 seconds. 6 seconds.
Just at that instant, a Jap destroyer passed over us going like a shark after Barracuda. But it was too late to stop now.
1 second.
And I gave the word to fire one, then two, then three, then four. We headed down, fast. I gotta take a look, Wong. Lou, take her up to periscope depth.
Periscope depth. Aye, aye, Captain.
Skipper, I gotta talk to you.
Come on, just a minute.
Periscope depth, Captain.
Up periscope.
Up a periscope. Cruiser's
down by the stern, Jimmy. We got her.
Captain, listen to me.
The fog's coming in again.
Captain, cell number 72 has revised itself. The storage batteries are going out.
Well, rip up the battery decks and get those jumpers across. I'll hold her speed down as low as possible.
Right, Skipper.
Take her down to 100 feet.
Captain, to periscope. Destroyer bearing down on us full speed.
Let me look. Forget the batteries. Full speed. Take her down, Lou. Take her down. Crash dive. Crash dive.
Captain, hurry up. Continue.
We moved down in a hurry. Whatever Lou was saying in Cantonese did the trick. Luck was with us, but we'd had a lifetime of luck in the past 20 minutes. It couldn't last forever, and it didn't. A sheet of blue flame shot through the boat. It followed the hull plates and flashed wherever moisture had collected. It made a blue halo around the sweaty faces of the men. It didn't seem hot. No one was burned. But the Chinese crew screamed in terror. Hydrogen. Hydrogen given off by the storage batteries. Something had touched it off before enough could build up to make a human bomb out of all of us. Now we had to surface, but we couldn't. Destruction was up there in the form of a Jap destroyer. Destruction down here. Hydrogen. Suddenly, I glanced at the depth gauge. We were coming up. The bowling planes, paralyzed with fear, had frozen the controls on hard rise. Get her down, Lou! Get her down!
I am trying, Captain. He does not understand. Chico, let us
go! We are breaking surface, Captain.
I cannot free the man from the controls, Captain.
Captain, through the periscope. Destroyer bearing down.
The impact threw all of us to the deck. I got back up in time to see water gushing down through the conning tower hatch. A direct hit. A superstructure destroyed.
Come on.
Close all watertight doors. Secure the hatches.
Captain, it lights. The lights are gone out.
The circuit breaker's knocked out.
Switch out the emergency lights. Young, can you work on the circuit breakers?
Aye, aye, sir.
We're getting water in the torpedo room.
Never mind that, man. Help Young with the circuit breakers.
Aye, aye, sir.
The crew, Captain. They're very frightened.
The lights are on. Lou, what's our depth?
150 feet, Captain. We are sinking rapidly.
Hard rise on the bound stern planes.
The circuit breaker's okay, Skipper, but the pumps can't handle this water.
We'll take charge of the air manifold, Jimmy. Blow out a little of number 2 main ballast.
Aye, aye, Captain.
200 feet, Captain. We're going down too fast, Captain. 225 feet, Captain. No, Captain. Wait, no, we are rising at 200 feet. Captain, I do not understand. 175 feet. We are rising rapidly.
Man, bend a little air out of the ballast tank.
Jim, what is happening? First, we are too deep, then we move up too swiftly.
It's the water inside the boat. It rushes forward, and we dive, then back aft, and we go up.
Still coming up, Captain. 100 feet.
It's no use, Skipper. The pumps can't handle our weight fast enough.
You sure the Kingston valves are open in the main ballast tank?
Yes, sir.
50 feet, Captain. Nearing surface.
Well, we'll have to take our chances on the surface, man. Blow all main ballasts.
Blow all main ballasts, Captain.
Captain.
What is it, Wong?
The crew, they don't understand what is happening. Water is filling ship.
Well, we'll be surfaced in 2 minutes.
But they have taken the knives from the ship's galley. They are crazed with fear.
Hold them off, I tell you. We're nearing surface.
Periscope depth, Captain.
Oh, never mind that, Lou. Take her up to the surface.
We're okay, Skipper. We're coming up.
Captain, listen to me. These poor farmers know nothing of submarines. They must be stopped.
Skipper, they're going for the hatches.
Wong, stop them. We're not surfaced yet.
Nearing surface, Captain.
I can't pull them back, Captain.
Captain, the water's pouring in on the batteries. Those crazy crews have opened the hatches.
Surface, Captain.
Skipper, the batteries. The salt water's pouring under the batteries.
Captain, what is this green
Wong,
gas?
Wong, pass the word for all hands to abandon ship.
Skipper, if that chlorine gets to us, we're finished. Let's get out of here.
Okay, where's Young?
I don't know. He was in a Chinese mob a few minutes ago. Skipper, the chlorine spread.
Yeah. Let's get Young. Follow me.
Skipper, look. Young.
Young.
A meat cleaver buried in his skull. He's dead, Skipper.
Well, he better stop that mob. He got that for his efforts.
Let's get out of here, Skip.
Yeah, you're right, Jimmy. We can't help young. This way. You okay, Jimmy?
Sure thing, Skip.
Those poor devils forgot to take their life jackets.
We can't help them, Skip, but they brought it on themselves.
Captain. Captain, you all right?
Yeah, all right, Warren. Where's Lou?
I don't know. We can still save the ship, can't we, Skipper? It's the gas that drove us out.
Three men can rob a sub. Warren, the S-boat belongs to your country. We leave her this way, she might drift into the hands of the Japs.
My country needs a submarine. We have so few weapons.
Well, it's you and man and me. Do you think we can save her?
No. You've done your best, Captain. It's for you to decide.
All right. Man, take the forward hatches. Wong, you take aft. We're going to scuttle her. We scuttled the S-boat. Wong, Man, and myself. Then we drifted apart in the black, muddy Yangtze River. I looked back just once to see my boat go down steadily by the stern. She was a pig iron wench of uncertain antecedents, but she'd been all mine, and she met her end like a lady. The last thing I remembered was the black water in the night. When I regained consciousness, I was aboard a Chinese fishing junk. And with the fish, I was delivered the following day to Ningpo.
Enough, gentlemen. You must contain your emotions. This man, this American, must be tried fairly.
As fairly as he has sunk our submarine. Do not forget that, worthy one.
You have heard his story. It is now up to us to believe it.
But you haven't heard my story. You've kept me locked up in your filthy jail for 2 days. You haven't let me wire my government. You haven't let me
please,
do anything.
Please, please, Lieutenant. You are making this most unpleasant. Indeed, we have listened to your strange tale. You yourself have admitted ordering our noble submarine to be sunk.
Yeah, but what about the rest of it? The battleship we sunk and the cruiser?
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not still portraying yourself in this ridiculous, heroic fantasy.
But I tell you, we sunk them, a battleship and a cruiser. Then we were forced to abandon ship. Ask the Japanese. They'll tell you we got two of their major ships before they got us.
Surely, Lieutenant, you are not so naive as to believe that our enemy would admit to this, even if it were true. Tell your distinguished superiors, these gentlemen gathered here, just who saw these imagined sinkings?
I did. And so did Wong, my first officer, Lieutenant Wong. He saw them, both of them.
Ah, so there was someone else. And pray, tell us then, where is Lieutenant Wong?
I don't know. He drifted away from me during the night.
He drifted away from you during the night. I believe we may now weigh the evidence. The crime is treason against the government of China. Gentlemen, how do you find this man? You see, Lieutenant, you deserve the maximum penalty. Death tomorrow morning before the firing squad. However, we are all too aware of your American citizenship. Therefore, we shall suspend this sentence under one condition, that you leave at once and never return to China again. Is so?
So I left China. My $1,000 a month salary, my bonus now worth $100,000, the unofficial Mr. Lee, I saw none of it or him. In the end, I was glad to be alive and to have discovered that I had my belly full of submarines for life.
under the direction of Norman McDonald, Escape has brought you Up Periscope by Alec Hudson, especially adapted for radio by William Frug, and starring High Everback. Featured in the cast were Harry Bartell and Edgar Berrier, with Lou Krugman, Ben Wright, Byron Kane, and Charles Lung. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
From August of 1951, it's been Escape with Up Periscope. That's all we have time for today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen and together enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those exciting days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions. All rights reserved.
Listener-supported Swing Street Radio, KSSR-DB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.